You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast on this Tuesday, March 13th, 2018. I am John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have a busy show. A little bit later on, we will have Maury Croson of the Performance Lab of California on as a guest. The Performance Lab of California is a biomechanics lab which helps athletes train, but they also have a great YouTube channel that breaks down the throwing motions of quarterbacks, both pro and college, some of the big prospects they've done videos on. Very informative YouTube channel if you've ever wondered about quarterback mechanics. And that's a topic that I get a lot of questions on with our mailbag segments, and I came across these videos. They were superb, so I wanted to have Maury on and talk a little bit about throwing mechanics, hopefully teach you a thing or two as you YouTube scout some of the prospects for this year's NFL draft. But before we get to that, we'll talk about the first day of the quote-unquote legal tampering period. The NFL offseason sort of got underway yesterday, but not really, but it had been going on for a couple weeks because there were trades that were made. Yesterday was the first day teams could talk to free agents legally. Now, the official start of free agency begins with the start of the league year tomorrow, and that's when teams can actually sign players to contracts. They can't do that yet, but they can talk to free agents. And if you're head spinning, welcome to NFL logic. The way the league runs this thing really leaves a lot to be desired in terms of logic. But the Jets and other teams were allowed to speak with free agents, and the Jets are expected to be active in this year's free agency since they have the most cap space in the league after the trades the Browns made. But it was a quiet first day, which inevitably in New York leads to a lot of panic, which maybe that makes this the panic edition of the Locked On Jets podcast, because the Jets were so quiet. So I guess it's my job here to tell you to not be freaked out about the lack of activity for the Jets on day one of the legal tampering period. You know, I even heard some people who were angry over the weekend because the Browns were making trades and the Jets hadn't done anything. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, free agency hasn't even begun yet. You know, there's still plenty of good players out there. Now, you don't want to wait too long. And one of the things I want to clarify is I've talked about how I'd like to see the Jets take a cautious approach in free agency. That does not mean I want to see the Jets sign no players. What that means is I want to see the Jets wait a little bit, wait for the market to come to them and make effective signings. Make signings that are cost-effective, because you can get into trouble if you're too quick out of the gate, if you're trying to set the market. You can sign some bad deals. What you need to do, and the Jets need to sign players because they need to improve this roster, but I think the Jets need to let the market come to them. They need to not necessarily be crazy out of the gate just trying to sign players for the sake of signing players. They need to sign players at good value. They kind of have to find the sweet spot, because early on, you see lots of teams get very aggressive and make a lot of deals that they ultimately regret. Now, you don't want to wait too long. You don't want to wait for all the good players to go and leave yourself with no options. So you have to kind of find the sweet spot. And we're still very early in the process. And although the Jets did not make many moves on Monday, it was really a quiet day overall in the NFL. It's not like there were other teams that were making big splashes. So I think a little calm should be in order. I don't like being the voice of reason, but I feel like I've been pushed into that role for this day at least. I don't think there's any real reason to get that upset. The big news from the Jets' perspective wasn't so much about players that they were targeting as much as it was internal free agents, a number of whom they did not lock up before the legal tampering period began, who are now free to talk with other teams, among them Maurice Claiborne, DeMario Davis, Chandler Catanzaro, and Austin Seferian-Jenkins. And of those players, Austin Seferian-Jenkins seemed to make the biggest splash because there were reports of a number of teams having interest in him, including Seattle. He played his college ball at the University of Washington, and Atlanta, where Steve Sarkisian, who was his college coach at Washington, is the offensive coordinator. So the Jets may have some competition for his services. And there was a report that the Jets were not willing to raise their original offer. You may have heard earlier in the offseason, and we probably talked about it, how they offered Seferian Jenkins a two-year, $8 million deal, $4 million a year, and he wanted more, and there was talk that the Jets really wanted to keep him. So I was assuming the Jets were going to raise their offer. They apparently have not. And I will say this at this early point, that's the kind of thing that encourages me a little bit, because, and it's not that I dislike Seferian Jenkins. It's not that I think he has no value. It's not that I think he doesn't belong with the Jets. It's that there's only a certain price where he makes sense. And for all of his fanfare, he wasn't that productive. Now, he was better than what the Jets had in 2015, 2016. And there's some value in that. There's some value in what he provided. But it's not great. He only had 350 yards receiving. He was not a big-time player for this team. So you have to be careful. You don't want to go crazy trying to retain a guy like that. And part of his value came in his small salary, because he was not making much money for this team. And the analogy I'll use, and I might get made fun of for this analogy because it's kind of a silly analogy, but it's the best one that comes to mind, is let's say I've got a budget for a dinner on Saturday night, and I go out to a restaurant that's just okay, but it's cheap. The fact that it's okay and I'm not paying much for it makes it an acceptable meal, because that leaves money in the budget. Maybe I can go to a movie, get some ice cream after the movie. So in the context of my Saturday night, that's a pretty good deal. Now, if I get that same okay meal and I'm paying my entire budget on it, that's not so great, because I'm just getting an okay meal. So I think in those terms, where a guy like Seferian Jenkins, if he's not making much money for your football team, he's providing you a little bit of value. But part of what he's providing you is flexibility, because you're not paying much to him. In addition to his value, you're able to go out and spend on a lot of other good players. So the total package is pretty good. Whereas if you're paying him a lot of money, he's not such a great value. You know, he doesn't bring enough to the table to justify paying much more than the Jets are offering him at $4 million. And if he goes, then you just have to make do. You have to find a way to replace him. And relative to other skill sets in the league, I don't think what he provides is really that difficult to replace relative to what other teams lose in free agency. We're talking 350-yard receiver, a willing blocker. I mean, a guy who gives effort as a blocker, which is not true of every tight end in this league, but a guy who still is kind of a mediocre blocker. He's not a great blocker. And I want to make that distinction, because there are tight ends in the league who don't give a great effort blocking. He tries hard. He's just not that great at it. He's okay. He threw some decent blocks during the season, but not consistently. So where the Jets are, I've wanted them to kind of draw a line in the sand, say, this is what this guy's worth to us. There's a certain price he's worth assigning. If he goes above that price, good luck, and we'll have to find a replacement. And again, I have nothing against Seferian Jenkins going out and seeking more money. That's his right. Limited career, you know, football players aren't around for very long. They got to make as much money as they can. If some other team is willing to give him that money, good for him. No hard feelings. But is it the right move for the Jets? I'm not so sure. And I think that goes for a lot of the other guys who are around this team. You've got Claiborne, who, again, he was okay. At a certain price, he probably makes sense. You have DeMario Davis, who, of the Jets' free agents, is probably the only guy you can say was legitimately very good last year. But at the same time, you have to look what else is around the league, and there are plenty of other players at his position. It seems like every year, I've mentioned this on a show recently, it seems like every year there are quality run-stopping linebackers available at a relatively cheap rate. So that plays into a player's value. That plays into how much you're willing to pay a player. Now, there was a little bit of news regarding the Jets in free agency. There were a couple of players that they were reportedly targeting on Monday. And these are not the big names like Kirk Cousins, although I'm sure they would make contact with Kirk Cousins the first instance they could. Talking about DeMario Davis, a younger player, Avery Williamson of the Titans, a linebacker who kind of has a similar game to Davis, had a very good 2017, good run stopper, not as great in coverage. The Jets have interest in him. He turned down an offer from the Titans, his original team. Diana Russini of ESPN reported that he was offered a 4-year, $12 million deal, so $3 million annual deal from the Titans. He turned it down, and the Jets are interested along with the Dolphins. Is he a better option than Davis? Well, he's a little bit younger. Now, on the other hand, Davis has experience in the system. Williamson doesn't, so maybe those things cancel each other out. I think, ultimately, I don't have a big preference here, and there could be other guys who come into the mix. I think the Jets can find a good player at the inside linebacker position, and I just don't want to see them overpay, because, again, this is a spot where you can find quality players. It's a spot where there are good players available, so just don't go crazy overpaying. I would not be upset to see Davis back. I would not be upset to see Williamson get a deal from the Jets. Just all about the price. It's all about the right price. The Jets did conduct their first visit as well, and it was about as unexciting of a free agent visit as you can have. Benson Mayawa of the Dallas Cowboys, who has been in the league since 2013, already been on three teams. He actually had a 6-sack season in Dallas in 2016, which is the good news. The bad news is that the rest of his career combined, he has 3 sacks. So, not necessarily the greatest potential addition. Probably not a guy who's going to cost a lot of money. And I call this kind of a barometer guy, because your reaction to this move probably speaks more to what you think about your team's GM than it does the actual impact it will have on the team. If you like your team's GM, you see a guy who's kind of an under-the-radar player like this, and you probably think, well, that's great. My GM is leaving no stone unturned. Whereas if you're not happy with your GM, you're saying, this is the guy they bring in. Ultimately, the Jets are going to be looking at free agents of all types. They're going to have to bring in starters. They're going to hopefully try and bring in some impact players. But there are also going to be some guys who are lower-level free agents, depth players, guys who are going to be brought in for training camp just because this is the first guy. They happen to bring in a depth guy first, that doesn't necessarily mean that this free agent period is going to be unsuccessful. So I think you just got to relax a little bit if you're upset about this. I'm not saying everything's necessarily going to be okay. I'm just saying it's too early to get overly upset over what the Jets are doing here. We'll find out whether they do a good job or not over the coming days and weeks. The first day of the illegal tampering period is nothing to get upset over, particularly considering there wasn't a lot of action elsewhere in the league. And one final thing to note is some of these deals happen under the radar. The Jets may be negotiating with bigger name players for all we know, and the word just hasn't gotten out yet. Sometimes these deals just come together, and we don't find out about them till they're almost done. So it's a good idea to just wait and see, relax, and over the next few days, we'll see what the Jets can do to upgrade their roster. Now let's move on to our guest today, Maury Croson of the Performance Lab of California. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, Maury works with athletes to maximize their performance. In addition to that, the Performance Lab of California has an excellent YouTube channel which breaks down a lot of the mechanics of quarterbacks, both in the NFL and college. And they've moved on to talk about running form for some Olympic runners and various other athletes, but what really drew my attention was their quarterback videos, because a lot of people have questions about what proper quarterback mechanics entail, and these videos teach you a lot, and they teach you a lot about the individual nuances each quarterback has. No two quarterbacks throw the ball the exact same way, and they speak to some of the individual quirks each quarterback has. So let's jump into our interview with Maury. He goes into great detail talking about what proper quarterback mechanics are. Joining us today is Maury Croson of the Performance Lab of California. And I'll tell you something. I stumbled upon the Performance Lab of California's YouTube channel a couple of months ago, and they have really great breakdowns on quarterbacks' mechanics. And they've taken a look at some of the quarterbacks in the NFL. They've taken a look at some of the draft prospects. And in my travels, one of the questions I get frequently are, what are the details of quarterback mechanics? Because it's something you hear about a lot. You hear about, this guy's mechanics aren't good, but you very rarely get specifics on it. And these videos do a great job breaking down the right way to throw the football, the right motions that you need, but also they take a look at the individual nuances of a number of big name quarterbacks you come across. So Maury's joining us today to talk a little bit about quarterback mechanics. Maury, thank you for joining us.
Of course, Sean. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to it. Great explanation.
So I guess the first question is, when our listeners take a look at some of the quarterback prospects in the draft, what are some of the things they should look for? What would you say are the foundations for good mechanics in a quarterback as you watch them throw the football?
Yeah, so I would say the big thing that transfers well to the NFL is the release time, being able to, you know, get rid of the ball as quickly as possible. And that really goes a lot into the efficiency of the throw. And that's where mechanics really come into play, is how efficient are you from the start of your loading process to you getting the ball out of your hands. And the more wasted motion that you have in there, and you know, the big, very obvious guy that stands out here would be like a Tim Tebow, right? A lot of wasted movement, a lot of wasted time with the ball, which makes it so you end up struggling, and also makes it so you have a bigger chance for error, right? If everything's nice and compact and nice and efficient, then, you know, your margin of error is a little bit smaller, than more movement, more put into the throw. Now, you know, there's more chances when you can make a small adjustment where your center of mass is, or where the elbow is coming through, or how the wrist is bending, and all these small subtle things when it comes to being able to throw a very time precise route and have to be very, very accurate and consistent like you do in the NFL, your margin for error and from a mechanic standpoint becomes very, very small.
One of the things that I frequently hear about quarterbacks and criticism is that they have a long windup. And would it be accurate to say a lot of that comes from if they start dropping the ball as they're loading it?
Yeah. I'd say a lot of it comes from where you're also holding the ball at the beginning, and even how you're holding the ball. Because there's some guys that try to hold it where the bottom of the ball is more facing, you know, kind of straight out. And then other guys that are holding the ball with the ball facing more straight down. And it seems like when the ball facing more straight down, that you set yourself up for a quicker release. But it goes into the windup too. So when you're going back, I mean, you have to be very, very technically sound in how you're doing it, because, you know, like you see, I did a breakdown recently on Josh Allen, and he is able to get that ball pretty far back behind him, but it doesn't stand out when you watch him throw that he has a really long, elongated release. So, and then the reason for that is because he doesn't spend a lot of time getting the ball back behind his head, and, you know, the movement of the ball is very, very linear. It doesn't go very much side to side. There's not a lot of sideways movement in the throw or in the wind up, and even as he's delivering the ball, which makes it so he ends up being able to get rid of the ball very quickly, and also gets a lot of power behind it.
So to the extent you can right now, can you maybe succinctly sum up the exact motions that you need to have, where you start the ball, how you move it, what angle you move it at to have a proper throwing motion?
Yeah, I mean, everybody, one of the things that is our motto is that there's not only one way to throw a football, right? There's a million ways to throw a football. But there's one specific way that each individual has to throw a football, right? There's one way that's kind of set up for you, set up for your biomechanics, set up for your anatomy. And so being able to have the proprioception to understand what that is key in making it so you can really progress your game to get to the highest level. And that's why you see like a Tom Brady and an Aaron Rodgers and, you know, even like a Phillip Rivers, they all have very different throwing motions. But they're all right in how they do it. But to real quickly just answer what you're saying here, John, what seems to be the most effective way to throw the ball, and really a lot of it has to do with the feet. And so I'll start there and say that when you go and you originally step, you want your momentum to first be going down into your back leg, down and back into your back leg. You don't want to be stepping, and immediately when you step, be falling forward into that front leg. So as you step, you have more weight kind of transitioning backwards. Now, there's different times of when the hip begins to open up towards the target and your weight begins to shift forward depending on the quarterback, but that ends up being a part of the movement pattern as you're bringing your arm back. So you're loading onto the back leg, you're bringing that arm back, and now as your weight, your hips start to open up on the front leg and your front hip starts to open up, now you want to begin the process of bringing up your elbow, bringing up your hand. So that's all kind of coordinated where the hips are beginning to open up while your front shoulder is still closed and you're just starting to bring up the hand, just starting to bring up the elbow. And I know this would be a lot easier to see if there's some visual here, but I'm trying to explain the best I can, as simple as I can. And then from where your elbow's coming up, your hand's coming up, you don't want the ball to spend much time going back towards your body. You want to make it so it's very circular in the movement. So where you start with the ball right out in front of your chest, as you bring the ball back, you want that to stay in the same line. And then as you bring it up overhead, you want it to still stay in that same line as your elbow's coming to meet the hand in that same kind of circular line, circular motion. At this point, your front hip has already started to open up. You're transitioning off of your back leg onto your front leg. And then your front shoulder starts to open up. Now your elbow is really starting to come through, allowing yourself to get some external rotation in the right hand. And then from there, you're really trying to flick the wrist and get a good amount of internal rotation in the arm as you're flicking the wrist and making it so your pinky ends up facing straight up in the air and you're onto your front leg. Basically, all of your weight it has transitioned off your back leg, and you're very balanced, very much in the front, in the balls of your front foot as you're finishing the throw. And that would be my simplest way of explaining all the different parts of it.
That's quite an explanation. And of course, you guys can check out the YouTube channel where they have visual displays of this. Now, I want to move on to just something you touched on, because you talked about the different ways guys throw the ball. And something I've said frequently when I've talked about quarterback prospects is I wonder the extent to which maybe people get a little too crazy picking apart mechanics, because the way I see it is I don't think you'd ever teach a kid who was first starting out playing football to throw the ball the way Philip Rivers does, but it works for Philip Rivers. It works really well. So to what extent do you think that a quarterback needs to do things a certain way? What's the point where you say you're doing it wrong? I think it seems to me like it's a fine line between keeping a quarterback within his comfort zone and teaching him to maybe avoid mistakes, avoid doing things the wrong way in a way that may hurt his game.
Yeah. And that's a great question. And really it boils back down to the whole efficiency thing. And I would even, make the argument that, while it's obvious that how Philip Rivers throws is the right way for him to throw, and that's why he continues to throw that way. I would make the argument that there's some inefficiency in his motion, which is what causes the inaccurate throws that you'll see him make on a somewhat frequent basis, right? I mean, I guess no quarterback can be perfect. Even Tom Brady has ability to be inaccurate and miss guys that are pretty open. But going into what you're saying, I look at all movement. I just don't only do quarterback. I do quarterback. I do pitchers. I do sprinters. I look at all movement and I say, okay, where are there some breakdowns in efficiency? And how important is it in the outcome of the throw? So, maybe there's a slight inefficiency in how the release is, but there's a bigger inefficiency in how the spine bends. Well, then I'm not going to put as much time in trying to fix the arm inefficiency until I can fix the spine inefficiency, unless the arm inefficiency is causing the spine inefficiency. So I know that might be kind of advanced, but essentially I'm going to go after the big fish first and then work my way back to the smaller fish. And with that thought process in mind, you're always going to end up having something at the time that ends up being an important thing to change. But as you get into the smaller and smaller fish, the tweaks that you're making are very, very slight. But if you can make those, and they're also very, very difficult to make, but if you can make those slight timing improvements, it's just like when you're talking about running a 40-yard dash. You know, maybe we can save a hundredth of a second in your release time, or in terms of on the sprint side, make it so you know, you're able to pick up another 3 yards in your throw, or something that ends up being very, very minuscule. But when it comes into the game of, you know, NFL or professional sports, has a much bigger impact on their overall performance and their overall consistency.
So I guess what you're saying is that even if something doesn't look conventional, even if it's not strictly by the book, if the quarterback is efficient with his motion, then it's okay.
Yes, yes. It's all about efficiency.
Now, before we go, I'm just looking to see if you have any general thoughts on some of the quarterback prospects from the class of 2018, the draft class of 2018, that you'd like to share from your study of them.
I mean, yeah, there's you know, it's going to be very, very interesting. I could say that. I know last year it was much easier talking about, you know, Carson Wentz and seeing, you know, just seeing how he threw it. Just seemed like he was going to be able to transfer over very, very effectively. And then going into, I guess that might have been 2 years ago. But now going into this year and this year's draft, seeing, you know, like a Josh Allen, I see how much of a Joe Flacco type he could be. The issue that I see with him is that when he starts to have to throw 10, 15 yard, you know, outs or comebacks, he becomes kind of inaccurate because he has a hard time maintaining a good center of mass. He hasn't got all of his body under control. So I think that's going to end up impacting him. I would say right now, to me, the guy that's the most complete would be Josh Rosen. Now, the issue with Josh Rosen is, can he stay healthy? And, you know, how well will he be? Because to me, I think he could also improve on his release time and how fast he can get rid of the ball. And so if he can improve there, now he'll be able to really excel at the next level. And then I'm very interesting to see like a Baker Mayfield as well, because he's also, it comes from a very athletic standpoint. He has a very quick release. The issue with him is going to be much more of the, how consistent can he be? Can he make those, you know, having all the accuracy questions that he has, and also all the kind of being able to make plays, extend plays, will he be able to do that as effectively at the next level is going to be a big thing with him. But from a quarterback and a technical and mechanic perspective, you know, I would say Josh Rosen. And then, you know, after that, I'd probably say Josh Allen would be second to me in terms of, you know, overall potential. And then after that, I'd probably say Baker is the third best guy. But yeah, that's all just kind of based off of, you know, trying to piece together the mechanics with the, you know, with the play and what the demands are in the NFL. It's hard to say legitimately today who's going to be the best guy.
All right. Well, Maury, thank you so much for joining us. This was a great, great visit for you.
Hey, thanks so much, John. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
And check out the videos, the YouTube channel of the Performance Lab of California, to learn more about quarterback mechanics. Thanks again to Maury for joining us, and thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this show, subscribe to it. Options include iTunes and Spotify, and leave it a good review in iTunes if you enjoy it. Hope you have a great Tuesday. We will be back on Wednesday to talk more Jets.